Welcome to Biff, a show where we talk about superhero TV shows, occasionally movies, and probably some other things that are comic book related. We're still figuring it out. I'm Dan Morin. I am joined by my fine co-hosts, Guy English. Hello, Guy.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right. It's weird because it feels familiar and it feels kind of alien at the same time.
Yeah.
John Maltz is also here. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Because this is a new show, I don't have a joke.
Okay, so. Well, that's fine.
Right, that's the thing. Yeah. That's what's killing me.
Yeah,
because normally we do really dumb jokes.
We're starting new.
We're starting new. It's a turning over a new leaf. We got a blank slate.
Only bad jokes.
Yeah.
Except for the name of the show.
which is a callback, but still.
Yeah.
So for those of you who maybe never watched Arrow or listened to our Speedy Arrowcast, which was recaps on the TV podcast, John and Guy and I have been recapping Arrow for several years, and we've had a lot of fun with it. But in recent years, we've sort of expanded our purview to talk about a variety of shows that we are interested in, many of which are related to comic books and superheroes. So we thought we would expand into a full new show where we talk about comic books and superhero TV and occasionally movies, as I said. That's kind of, I guess, why we're here.
On Earth.
That's why we were placed here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know,
if we were placed here on Earth to do this,
just go with it.
Fine.
It's too late.
You're already here.
This is the life you've made for yourself.
This is right.
Embrace it, or you know.
So we will be chatting about basically the way this show is going to work is we're going to probably recap an episode of superhero TV. I think we'll as much as possible kind of try to stick with remaining contiguous in the sense that, like, if we start recapping a show, we won't suddenly recap a different show halfway through the season. but the format is kind of up in the air, so we'll try to figure that out as we go along. We are starting out by talking about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which all of us watch, and season 6 of that started just the other week. So what we're going to do today is recap episodes 1 and 2 of season 6. And then going forward, we will turn that into sort of like one episode a week recaps through the end of that season. And then we'll see where we are and what we're going to head on to next. And then later on in the show, we'll talk about more generally about some of the other superhero shows that are going on, as well as taking your letters. So with all of that said, I think we're prepared to jump into our recap. John, I think you have elected to give us a brief recount of these last couple episodes.
If you have listened to the Speedy Arrowcast in the past, this will not be at the same level of detail because we have other things to talk about in this show. So we're going to keep it a little bit shorter, perhaps, at least. And so I'm going to do both episodes as one and just kind of speed through it.
John, I think this is a shame because I'm pretty sure everybody tuned in for our detailed recap of Arrow every week.
Well, Guy, when it's your turn, you can do whatever you want.
When it's my turn, our numbers go way up because everybody just wants to know the details, and that's all they care.
This episode of Biff is brought to you by Guy's Recaps. Sit back, open a beer, and enjoy.
Enter the coupon code for a 25% shorter recap.
All right. So Daisy, Gemma, and the Shieldlings, who are Piper and the guy who everybody thought was dead and turned out not to be dead.
Davis. I think his name is Davis.
Yes. Okay. Are in the Zephyr in space, and they're looking for Fitz. Everyone but Gemma wants to call it, but Gemma uses the last of their fuel to take them on one more jump to find him. Fitz and Enoch, meanwhile, are stuck in an alien ship, and Fitz is pretending to be an alien and working on the ship, but he gets found out. He has a run-in with the captain, and in order to save himself and the rest of the crew, he and Enoch have to jettison the captain and his lieutenants into space. Then they speed away from the planet, just as Gemma and the Zephyr jump right to that planet.
How great is it that the only difference between aliens and humans is a little bit of eye color?
Yes.
And an entirely different language.
Super convenient.
Which he had to learn.
Sure.
And that one guy had a haircut and a tattoo or something. I don't know.
It's no worse than Star Trek, but it's no better than Star Trek.
Right. That's kind of where I'm going. It's like it's right in the middle. That's what aliens are. Right.
Yeah. On Earth, S.H.I.E.L.D. has a whole new group of agents. Mac and Yo-Yo are distant, and Yo-Yo has a new beau who, and somehow in my mind, I thought that he had some secret, and I thought there was some scene where he was texting somebody on the sly, like, information, but then I went back and watched again, and I was like, oh, no, I just made that up. He seems like he's not a DJ, okay? He's not a DJ, not so a DJ. Chances are he's just going to get killed later. They investigate a crime spree, and it turns out to be aliens. Yeah, more human-looking aliens. They need crystals to open portals to bring other aliens to Earth.
By the way, welcome to the very first sponsor of Biff.
Ah, there we go.
Portal spray. You may have seen Batman use it in the Arkham Asylum series of games. Sprays it on the wall in a bat configuration and blows it up. Now it has been improved, and it has jumped universes, and just like Phil... you can spray it on a wall and walk right through it.
That sounds convenient.
Ask for it by name.
Ask for it by name. Yeah. But, well, it's different than bomb spray. Bomb spray is a very specific thing. This is portal spray.
Be careful. I mean, you could use portal spray on a bomb and just send the bomb somewhere else.
Mm.
Whoa, it's got a problem solver, okay?
That's really trippy stuff.
They sent us some portal spray, didn't they, guys?
They did. Yeah. I lost my leg. So...
God, yeah.
I accidentally made a portal into the bathroom. It's just really awkward now.
That's not funny. Yeah. That's not. Yeah. Kyle losing a leg is not funny.
That's how J.K. Rowling's would like explain it. Whatever.
Anyway,
let's just pull the ripcord. Get out of this joke.
The boss of the aliens happens to look just like Coulson, and turns out to even have Coulson's DNA. They figure out later. He doesn't act like Coulson though, because he straight up murders a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. He does say the name Coulson rings a bell with him, though. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s a new science guy pieces together that these aliens seem to be setting up the Earth to be eaten by some really bad alien monsters of some kind. I think that's it. May gets in a really terrific fight.
I was going to say, I was going to call that out. That is a fantastic fight scene. And of course, the one downside to it is, of course, that May, being May, doesn't call for backup in that fight scene, which really would have solved the problem of tracking them down. Like, all you had to do was call it in and be like, by the way, I think their truck is in this yard.
Is invisible.
They're invisible in this yard.
Maybe the invisible just, like, truck also seems... Also, we should get Invisible Truck as a sponsor, but also seems like before the sponsor, seems somewhat problematic to be driving down the highway.
Yeah, I feel like
I think merging with an invisible truck might be difficult.
Also, I feel like it's a nice spin on the truck heists so popular in Arrow, where instead the truck is the thing that is doing the heists, I guess, or it's so stationary but a location.
Really sad that the past season, maybe season and a half to two seasons, did not feature any truck heists.
Yeah, well, there's always there's always time for more.
There's so much bunker though.
They are bunker thick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is true. Yeah. That was a really great fight scene with May. Because
the portal creates a lot of fun, right?
Right.
they keep flipping the portal in different directions.
I did enjoy it. Yeah. And it's, not to compare too much, since we spent a long time covering Arrow, but I think what always impresses me when I switch over to this is how much more budget ABC has.
Yeah. The production quality is way higher.
Everything looks better. And even the CW shows do very well with their resources that they have for fights and stuff, but like it is incredibly dynamic and the stunts and stuff are much more. I don't want to say it's not quite immersive, but like there's fewer obvious places where I felt like they were cutting away to stunt doubles. It seems like it's very fluid. It doesn't take me out of the action as much either. Like, and I think that they come up with really creative ways to shoot and manipulate those environments.
There was a lot of repetition in Arrow.
Here's the thing though. Every shot that you set up costs, right?
Yes.
Even if you're having a very quickly cut fight scene, it's not just a matter of the performers being amazing. You actually have to set up all the shots, light it differently, find the camera, like edit it all. It costs a lot of money. S.H.I.E.L.D. just has more money,
right?
I don't think anybody's particularly better. Maybe there's some people that are great, and
the agency and the show.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say, I do want to call out that this episode with the fight scene was directed by Kevin Tancheron, who's,
yep.
He is really good at fight scene. Like, he did a couple, there was one back in season 3, 4, there's one that has, like, a really great Daisy fight scene in it. Yeah. I believe that was his, like, I think he's directed a lot of the TV episodes. He's also done some Arrow episodes and some of the CW episodes, and he's got an eye for that kind of thing, I think. And also worth noting while we're on the subject that the season premiere was actually directed by Clark Gregg.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which is great.
I noticed that.
I just, I don't know, to warm up for Game of Thrones, I watched Avengers last night. Don't ask how that fits together. It doesn't.
I'm not going to.
I just had 2 hours to kill. And man, I really like Clark Gregg. He's great.
Yeah, he is.
Me too.
He is. It's interesting to watch him. I'm kind of curious what's going on with his character, right? So they go through all their, like, possible explanations. I've forgotten the name of our new science expert, but I know that actor, he's been around.
Yeah, I've seen him around too. Yeah.
But he goes through all the possible explanations based on all the things SHIELDs run into, including LMDs. And I thought it was nice that they sort of, like, we've dealt with this kind of thing before. Let's just go through the Rolodex of possible excuses.
Yeah. And but he's pretty mad about, like, the stuff that they've done.
Which,
like,
is fair. Like,
yeah, which I actually did. Yeah.
Dr. Marcus Benson. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
He may be the biff here because he's just drunk and he's like, you people, you're blowing up the earth. Everything is horrible. I'm sick of you. Oh, do you really need my help? Okay, fine. Maybe I'll help you.
This whole thing with the DNA is kind of interesting because it suggests that this is, I don't know.
Oh, it's Coulson. It's Coulson from another world.
Or that's he's cloned? Like, maybe he was a clone?
Yeah, possibly.
I also thought it was telling that there's several times where there's sort of the somewhat crazy lady in the crew who keeps promising to turn people into butterflies when she kills them. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, like, not everybody turns into a butterfly when you kill them or something. And I wondered if that was also some sort of, like, is this people who have died or died in strange ways that somehow get transported to?
Oh, wow. You're reading a lot more into it.
Oh, I'm totally going. hold on. John, I forgot to ask you to open Conspiracy Corner.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Please. It's important. All right, great. Join us in Conspiracy Corner.
One day we're going to pay 99 cents for actual
Do not ask,
but until
do not
then,
ask why the corner has a door.
Right.
To go into my totally postmodern take on... I have no idea... But it kind of was like one of those things where, well, what is the origin of these people? Are they all... Because they make a reference to one of the guys, I guess, being an alien. They talk about him, like, not having breathed the atmosphere on his native planet
a
long time.
The big guy has to have a... every once in a while, he has to breathe something else.
Yeah, so are they also all low-budget aliens? LBAs.
They have
LBAs,
a bigger budget, but not that much of a bigger budget.
Yeah.
Do you know what I noticed when I was watching, and this is a little bit off topic, watching Avengers last night, is Coulson is trying to get Tony on the phone, and Tony basically says that he's...
Yes, life model decoy.
Life model decoy.
Yes,
I remember
that.
Years before the actual...
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I feel like it's like it was a theory out there, like somebody wrote a paper...
Right.
Life model decoys, and then finally whoever.
Yeah. Ratcliffe?
Yeah, Ratcliffe.
Yeah.
Right. Fitz.
Yeah. Well, they make a joke about him in this episode where he talks to the Benson's like, I would help if I could talk to the guy who created them.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that's going to be tough.
Right.
Yeah. That's actually the reason I started watching Avengers is that I'd watched these two episodes. And I was like, you know what? I need to get my head back in this space instead of like Ninja DJ
the Arrowverse
space.
Yeah. Right.
I will say this about I think the last two seasons have been really solid, including moments of really great arcs, you know, so we had the
I think
framework.
They've been really good.
Yeah, the framework really arc has been
and I went
fantastic.
Back and watched the whole thing again. Like I think like a year ago maybe, and it was better than I remembered it.
Yeah, it's really. I
remember
the
at the time I was kind of like, it's fun, but it's not. You know, it's nothing to write home about. But I enjoyed it a lot more the second time through.
I should do that. I wanted the show to end with May and Coulson on that beach in Tahiti.
Yeah, well, it didn't.
And it would have been fine.
I didn't want it to end. That would have been a great ending, though.
And there was another episode where they had the... Was that the same episode they had the wedding in... No, that was a couple episodes earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a couple that I was like, do you know what? If these people end up in a weird reality where this is their happiness, I'm fine with that. 100%. They kept going, but
yeah,
and I'm glad because I enjoy the show. But this show has basically stuck the landing 2 to 3 times already.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Well, I feel like they keep
pretty,
worrying.
Pretty amazing.
They keep worrying they're going to get canceled.
Actual ending will be terrible.
yeah, that's right.
That's right. Well, I mean, they keep worrying. I feel like they keep worrying they're going to get canceled, and so they're like, "Well, we got it just in case."
They do it right.
Right.
They don't.
Yeah,
which is great. I mean. It's weird that the very last episode of every season, Coulson is petting a dog for some reason. But besides that,
a really big dog,
right? It's a really big dog.
I love so far in this season the outer space, like at least the look of the outer space stuff. It all looks really great. The whole scene in the first episode where they're on the Zephyr and there's like the destroyer flying overhead. I don't know. It felt cool. It had a lot of tension. And I like that it's, you know, outer space is just a thing now. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We just fly around in our ship in outer space. What's the big deal?
It is a little.
Go ahead, John.
Well, it's a little weird to me that they seem to be completely ignoring Endgame.
Yeah. So
after spending years dragging us through, being loosely tied to the rest of the MCU. I mean, it was technically supposed to be part of it, but it was always like, it was a little bit hands off for the most part after the first two seasons, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And now it seems like it's not related at all, which can be explained like, I mean, I don't know.
Well, there's a couple ways to explain it.
I haven't seen a definitive statement of what exactly is going on here.
I don't think there has been, but there are a couple options that are.
Sure.
There's the easy option is like, well, you know, these are now two totally different universes, essentially.
Right.
Which is possible based on the multiverse hint that we saw in the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer. Maybe there's something happening there. The other possibility is that it is during those 5 years. But like, you know, this is... I think they could have said something like, oh, we need to rebuild S.H.I.E.L.D. and plus, you know, half the Earth's population's gone, so this is really important or whatever. And they probably could have gotten away with that. But
I would like to know.
I
would like an answer.
I think the
Here's
problem
the thing,
is
they
we're kind of
they spend a chunk of a season picking up after Thor 2.
Yeah. But like, as John says, they diverge since then. I think that's the problem.
I know. I get it. And honestly, half of everybody just goes away for 5 years. Makes it hard to write your TV show.
Yep.
Sure.
Because how do you explain that, like, it just happened that none of the characters you loved went away?
Yep.
Like, that's tough. And maybe the answer is just don't pay attention to it.
That's not going to work for John.
Like, do we actually need an explanation?
John does.
I need an explanation. I mean, I've invested so much in the show. I think I'd do an explanation.
John, what is the flight time from Central City, or Star City, to Nanda Parbat?
What is it? 30 minutes.
Is it?
There are trips.
I don't know.
There are planes leaving every 30 minutes.
They fly right through the Earth.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, that's probably true.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That I think. You know,
see,
so much...
that's a conceit. That's a conceit.
It
of
is
that universe,
conceit.
Right?
I know.
That's
I know.
A conceit of the universe. So that and that has been that way since day one. So that is completely consistent. This is now inconsistent.
I know. My version of doing a yes and for your topic is just to say no, but so. It's not as constructive.
Yeah.
Well, until I hear differently, I'm going with the multiverse theory.
I think we have to.
Sure. It's the only one that vaguely makes sense.
Well,
right?
Plus,
I sort of consider the universe that Thanos left. Because he disappears, but then that doesn't make sense for last season, because the whole reason, I mean, what's his face's whole reason for becoming Graviton or whatever his name was, was because he wanted to fight Thanos,
right?
So,
right,
who knows?
Yeah, but there's a Thanos in every, you know what I like about our Avengers in the the universe that we live in on screen. I don't know where
the
I'm
MCU,
going with that.
No, we don't live in that universe.
But in the MCU,
is 616,
yeah. Yeah, they killed two Thanoses.
True.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Pretty,
yeah.
Like, they've got to be hitting above average.
That's like kill one, get one free.
Yeah, right. They pretty much helped that other universe out where they took him. Yeah, where he left.
I mean, they took him before he could do anything bad. They're like, they drew him in and then murdered him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
you're welcome.
Yeah, here's the funny thing. In that universe, Tony Stark is just a huge dick. He doesn't learn anything.
It's less moralizing there.
What a shame.
They're all living under Ultron's boot.
Well, So I kind of feel like I'm kind of wondering if some of this year's S.H.I.E.L.D. hijinks are multiverse related with these characters that we've seen, these villains who are sort of incursioning from another planet, Earth, reality. It's unclear at this point.
So I feel it has to be based on the DNA thing. A clone is, of course, possible, but the way they're using the portals, and they're explicitly saying that they've traveled through worlds and had them destroyed, right? I'm wondering if... hey, John, are we still in Conspiracy Corner?
I'm not sure how to get out of it, frankly.
Okay.
I know how to get into it.
Okay. But we are secure.
Yes.
This is a secure transmission.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. No, we all synced up early on.
Okay. And you've plugged up Berlanti's ears.
Berlanti's gone. No more Berlanti.
No more Berlanti.
No more kidnapping Berlanti.
The monitor took him. It's fine.
Good to know.
The monitor took him, right. Speaking
What if this is a Galactus thing?
Well, I wondered about that, actually.
Like
I wondered if
these planets seem to be being consumed.
I don't think they want to pull that trigger, though, on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
It seems like Galactus might be something that they would save for it. Because they're going to have the Fantastic Four soon. Mm-hmm. I mean, assuming within the next few years, the Fantastic Four will be in the MCU.
But what if Clark Gregg is the Silver Surfer? I kind of love the idea of that.
Is that really where you were going with that?
I don't know. Just put that guy in a Speedo and spray paint him silver, and I would watch that in a second.
I'm sure.
One of the things I was going to say about Clark Gregg is in this role that he's playing, it strikes me as though he does different things than Coulson, but he also doesn't seem like he's not Coulson to me. And I can't tell if that's Clark Gregg's, if those are choices, or there is a somewhat of a limitation of Clark Gregg in terms of his acting ability. Because, like, he does
I think it's just, like, it's part of the tease, because he has to be a little bit like Coulson, otherwise...
But like I really don't
think it's a limitation of his acting ability.
I want to give him more credit than that because I think he is a really good actor. But also, I know that when you play one character for a long period of time, it can be hard to like get out of the break that mold. But yeah, he acts in a way that like he takes actions like shooting the guy or whatever that feel very un-Coulson like. But nothing about his. Even his mannerisms and his
demeanor
speech
is
patterns.
Calm and calculating.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Which is sort of akin to Coulson,
right?
Or our Coulson,
right? Yeah. So that makes me more curious about it again because it does seem like he could be
when he comes out of the bus and May has like basically punched up everybody and he's just like seriously.
I was gone for 3 minutes.
Yeah. And I do like that he's Coulson-like. Like, look, you don't have to kill everybody. Can we just not like
right?
Keep around. It's fine. Like, you don't get the sense that he cares for that woman's life, but you also don't get the,
he's not bloodthirsty.
Says that he's like, we don't need her dead, so why? Like, just chill out with your butterflies. Let's just get the job done, you know? Which is a Coulson thing to do, I think.
Right.
Although Coulson would err on the side of saving lives over taking them.
Sure.
This guy, his mission.
The
objective is paramount.
Okay.
And he has to take a life, fine, but if he doesn't, whatever.
Okay.
Don't do it.
I'm putting a stake in the ground and putting some money on the table. I'm mixing some metaphors.
How many quartlus?
Dabo!
I'm a new
Dabo quartlus!
The big question I think everyone is like, is this really going to stick or are they going to eventually bring Coulson back? I believe they will probably bring Coulson back, but in my head I figured out how they'll do that. I have no idea if this is right or not, but this is what I'm putting out there. So
do,
the
we,
end
do
this,
we have a corner within a corner?
Yeah, this is a conspiracy.
It's just corners all the way down.
Conspiracy corner.
This
corner.
Is a Russian nesting doll of conspiracy corners.
Welcome to
leading
Detroit's
all the way to the president. Oh, sorry, wait, wrong show.
So I was thinking to myself, well, okay, so you've got this character, but essentially he lacks Coulson's memories. But that last guy, when at the end of this episode, we see that he has like a bio hard drive on him that, that allows them to look at the footage of that other Earth getting, or that other planet getting devoured or whatever. I was like, oh, I wonder if they have like bio hard drives. Oh, maybe they could just download Coulson's memories. Where would they get Coulson's memories? Ah, Mac has on his desk the cube with all of Coulson, basically his like lessons and stuff in it. So it makes me wonder, it may not be like they download his memories, but what if they somehow use that as like the template for this is how our Coulson comported himself? What if you act along these lines? Can we sort of retrain him to be more like Coulson? So that's my, there's my conspiracy corner theory.
That's, I could buy that.
Yeah. It's only double quatloos, my friend.
It's only, well, first of all, Dabo is what you, it's a game.
Okay, I know, I know.
I know you know. Quatloos are from the gamesters of Trashelion. So these Dabo Quatloos is not a thing.
Same universe, though.
Same universe, exactly. Yeah, but I don't trust Dan trying to pull a fast
you can,
one on
You
me.
Can wager, well, first Dabo, yeah. Dabo is not currency.
Okay, fine. Did you want me so gold press Latinum? Are you happy
you
now?
Could, you could, yeah. you might be gold able to wager Latinum Quatloos in a Dabo game, though.
Right. Yes, you could. Now I missed my actual point, which was
because we got hung up.
It's not that kind of show.
Here's the funny thing. My actual point is also a dumb joke, which is so you want Coulson to become like B4 in the Star Trek Nemesis,
right? Exactly.
Where they clone data basically
hold on. This seems
into
like
a new robot.
This seems like a trick. A I want name. Nothing to ever be like Star Trek Nemesis.
We were talking a lot about Star Trek for a show that's not supposed to talk about Star Trek.
That's true.
All right. Other things I liked in this episode. I'm just getting us back on track. I like that we get more time with Enoch, who I've always enjoyed as a character because he's just very strange.
Yeah. Enoch is cool. What, do we know that? I mean,
personally,
I'm sure we can find out that actor's name, but he feels like he's been around forever. He's always a little, he is. Often plays a very curious character, right?
Joel Stouffer.
Okay. I don't remember where else I've seen him, though. I totally agree. He looks really familiar.
He looks like super familiar. Could be like either...
He was in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Maybe that's what you're thinking.
Well, let's not hold that against him.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes.
I think in my head, I always think that he basically looks like one of the observers from Fringe.
Yes. That's what I'm thinking about, is that he looks like an observer.
Yeah, I don't think, which he did not play,
every time I
just
see
to
him,
clarify.
I'm like, he's a watcher. I just think he's a watcher. And well, he's not.
A chronicom? Is that what they call him?
Yeah. I would prefer if they just called him a watcher. But those guys are kind of all-powerful, though, right? Like
He's a robot, right? Like
sort of. Yeah, he's a robot, basically. Right.
Yeah.
And we've actually seen Watchers in the Marvel Universe, and they look basically identical to the comic books.
Where do we see Watchers in the Marvel Universe?
Totally Game of Thrones 2, when they're jumping all over the place.
In a scene with Stan Lee.
There's a shot with Stan Lee. Yeah. And they were just flat
is
out.
Is that Guardians 2, like, Guardians 2, probably?
I think it's Guardians 2.
Yeah.
I lose track of these things.
I am coming up... I guess I have not seen him in anything because I don't none of the
okay.
like
so,
stuff that I've
he's
seen.
Got one
he's
of those
been
faces.
A lot of. He's been a lot.
He's got
of stuff,
one of
though.
Those faces that and
oh he was a, oh I know I have seen him. He was a vampire and angel.
Oh,
okay. He was vampire number one.
Oh, that's
you
him.
You can't get any higher than that.
Vamp one. It's the Vamp first one. And a man, I had a T-shirt with that guy's face
oh,
on.
Man,
it
Man, he was in the seminal Jet Li movie, The One. It's a terrible movie.
Oh wait.
Really bad movie.
Well,
I'm not
Sliders. He was
important.
In Sliders. He was a Cro-Mag.
Okay, so clearly,
he did a lot of daytime TV too.
Maybe he's just like one of those that guy faces that I recognize.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
I think it's a. Bear with me here. I think casting him is great because he does feel like it's sort of an everyman / vaguely inhuman robot. Look,
he's an everybot.
He's an everybot, right? And I think the casting is a little bit like Clark Gregg, where I think you cast Clark Gregg because he looks like an FBI agent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure. That guy looks like a G-man, 100%. And I think that's why he worked so well as Coulson in the MCU for so many years. And that's sort of
why... He looks boring. I mean,
he's a handsome man, but he's boringly handsome.
He's white bread.
If you know what I mean. Like,
He looks like a paper pusher.
Yes, exactly. I'm not knocking him. Very handsome guy. All of it, but...
He's way better looking than the three of us put together.
He's not listening to this show, guys.
Maybe
stop buttering him up.
Well, maybe he might. I'm going to start mailing them to him.
What if we kidnap Clark Gregg?
Oh, no.
Right? No.
We got away from kidnapping.
Yeah, I think we've left that in the past.
All right, fine.
But no, so what I'm trying to say is that the casting is terrific. Like, there's a number of characters that really, really fit their roles. And this is obviously not just this season, but broadly, right? Like, Fitz, I think, looks like kind of a nerdy guy.
Yeah.
Handsome, because it's TV, but like, generally,
they're all spectacularly good looking.
Yeah.
People.
Right. Oh yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So okay, I'll remove that baseline because it seems distracting. So yes, everybody is incredibly good looking, but the way he holds himself and the way he plays that character is kind of nerdy, and it works.
I think that's called acting.
Yeah, but I think you're taking. Yes.
No. Obviously. I mean, it's a combination of acting and good casting.
Hope for this season.
I think there is a lot to be said for casting that often goes unsaid, and I don't know how to express it.
I'm not a casting agent.
I don't talk that language, but it's working really well, especially on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
John. What is your hope for this season?
My hope for this season is that if we're doing the multiverse thing, why not bring Ward back?
Well, right. You gotta.
I really hope so.
I really hope
that conceit, that thing where they kept bringing him back in different forms year after year, and he was like sometimes good, mostly bad. I thought that was to the point where it was hilarious.
He's the Tom Cavanaugh of this show.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, Ward's another guy that looks like he's a good guy that's going to fuck you over somehow. Oops, sorry. Did we not say that on that show?
Nope.
Well, I guess we don't know.
Well,
oh, do we? I don't know. Yeah, okay.
No,
I'm fine either way.
Ward looks like the kind of like good jockey kind of guy that you can be pals with, but when it comes to a crunch, he may just screw you over.
Yeah, I mean, he's very handsome, but I liked him so much more once we got the real Ward, essentially. Like,
yeah,
that
was Agent of Hydra,
right?
Yeah. Because I think that was one of the things that was off-putting in the first half of the first season of this show, is that it felt kind of like some of these characters didn't really have a personality. And with Ward, I think that was kind of by design. But that's a hard, like, you know, 8 or 10 episodes to go through with having a character who is carrying a chunk of your show who is by design has no personality.
Yeah. Right. Compare that to. I don't know if you guys watched it, but this show about an archer, Arrow. In the first season, I think that there's the actors just carve out personalities for their characters. Like Diggle in the first season is incredible, right? Like he's kind of the character is kind of written is kind of just starts out as a goofy driver kind of guy, but just the way it's played is
stodgy ex-military.
Right. Yeah. Felicity, sort of famously at this point, was meant to be like a one-off or like, you know, just a couple of times. And it just the chemistry with her and Amel was just so good that they were like, okay, you know what? We're going to have her on the show all the time.
Right.
The first season of S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't do that for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why. I think it really did not. I think it took about
it's much more top down.
Yeah, there's like 10 episodes where it's like, I don't know, I'm just watching this because it's Marvel and because there is like a... at that point, there was the Joss Whedon connection. I would, when we still liked Joss Whedon, I guess. You know, and I was like, all right, there must be something here. I'll give it through the end of the season. And then there's like, it starts towards the middle of the season, right before the Winter Soldier thing happens. It starts to improve as it feels like, okay, we've sort of got our feet underneath us. And then the Winter Soldier reveal happens, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's the point of this show. Like,
is that in the first season?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
It's halfway through.
Okay, I've got to go back and watch it.
Which seems, it seems kind of nuts to me that they set up this show knowing that they were going to destroy S.H.I.E.L.D. like halfway through the first season.
And that's why it seems kind of mean, too, the fact that now they've been relegated to sort of the backbenches of the MCU. Was like, our whole show was like here to help you. And now it's like, we don't care about you. Nothing that happens on your show really matters. And we're not going to help you work your show into our universe. Yeah.
They gave him two more seasons.
Well, you know, one left hand, right hand.
Yeah, right.
Do we know the behind the scenes on that? I mean, I don't read a lot of, I don't read these trademarks things until
Dan
sent something to me.
The Marvel arm that is responsible for Marvel TV is fundamentally different from the Marvel studio. Like, they are both owned by Marvel, but they are different branches of the company. And so the Marvel that is on TV, which includes the Netflix shows, includes, you know, Cloak and Dagger, Runaways, all those other, you know, non sort of MCU shows. Those are all run by, I believe, Marvel Entertainment, which is headed by Ike Perlmutter, who is a real real jerk. Awful. And not for reasons we won't entirely go into here, but is, you know.
Sorry, I didn't. I didn't mean to walk into that trap.
Yep, that's that fine. But it's like, it's basically a divi- so they control the TV stuff. And then the Marvel Studios section, which is, I think, basically got him absorbed by Disney before even the whole Marvel got absorbed by Disney thing, which is kind of, again, sort of confusing, or this part isn't owned by Disney. I'm not even sure anymore.
I don't know if they got absorbed so much as they were the only distributor, right? So that there's a very tight... I don't want to say incestuous, but like there's a connection, right? Like if you are producing stuff and you've got one distributor, there is by necessity a tight coupling of interests.
Right. Well, so what happened is Marvel Entertainment is owned by Disney, but Marvel Studios is a separate unit that is a subsidiary of Disney. So they are cousins, but they are not like in the same line of like chain of command, basically. So Marvel Studios doesn't report to Marvel Entertainment and vice versa. They do have the same corporate parent in Disney, and obviously ABC is also a Disney company, which is why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ended up there in the first place. But it also means that Marvel Studios is essentially not beholden to respect anything that Marvel Entertainment does, and vice versa. Marvel Entertainment obviously has a lot more to gain by tying themselves to the MCU than the other way around. So that is why
they feel like my parents trying to explain to me why I can't get bubblegum flavored peanut butter. I'm not interested in the corporate BS. I just want to know, why does this not
You'll rot your teeth.
Yeah, well, there's that too.
You'll shoot your eye out, you crazy kid.
This is more complicated by the fact that starting in, you know, the fall or beginning of next year, there will be shows on Disney Plus, which are part of the MCU and made by Marvel Studios. And so we'll have closer ties to the MCU. So that's going to be a real party.
Yeah. Right. So prior to this, we basically played in the CW universe, right?
Sure.
This seems vastly more complicated.
There's a lot more money at stake here, for one thing, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can tell. First of all, you see it on the screen, even in the projects that they don't care about.
Yeah.
which is kind of remarkable. Is there, like, do we suspect that there is some plan afoot to aggregate all of this under one umbrella, or will TV always be a sort of a bit of the ugly stepchild?
I think that really depends on that's sort of more corporate stuff in terms of how the companies get arranged, because part of me will be surprised. They renewed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for two seasons. Part of me would be surprised if it continues after that.
Mm-hmm.
I would be shocked, season seven, right? Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked, but at the same time, I wouldn't be, you know, I feel like it could go either way very easily. And I think that Marvel, meanwhile, has started, like, the Marvel Entertainment stuff, something the other day, I can't even remember now, but they mentioned, like, four other projects that they were launching, and it was like, these sound bananas and just sort of like strange. Yeah. And I think it's just like places where they have the opportunity to do things that essentially aren't going to be done in the movies. Although there was,
but how's that not, you know, the Netflix shows, right? Or yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right. Or I think they did announce Ghost Rider show, which is
but it's the S.H.I.E.L.D.
the same actor, but it's not connected, which is the weird part. And it's like, now I feel like Marvel Entertainment just does not have its crap together, basically.
How do you not do that? How do you not see the success of your cousin, the MCU, and be like, you know what, just a little bit of planning, we could get this going well.
Well, part of me wonders
maybe they got tired of like trying to do the, you know, because the MCU wants to do big things and change the universe at its own whim, and that has a ripple down effect to all these other shows. And I think maybe they decided that was too onerous.
Well,
to the storytelling for these shows,
they kind of tried to do their own mini version with the Netflix shows, and it feels like in some ways, I won't say that backfired, but it didn't succeed to their wildest expectations.
Well, but
right?
I think that was more of a an issue of the fact that they did not own Netflix.
Well, not just that, but like I'm thinking of stuff like The Defenders, for example, did not do very well.
No, The Defenders kind of stank. But you
and,
know
and
what?
Not just like in a critical way, but in a, I think it was not a very, it wasn't widely watched either.
Right.
And yeah, I think that to them was like, well, why? I think they asked themselves to a certain degree, why put all this energy into creating stuff that's really intricate and expensive to do in terms of scheduling all these actors when we could just throw a whole bunch of crap against the wall and see what sticks.
Well, and that's the weird thing, though, because I don't get the sense. I like both Runaways and Cloak and Dagger, but I don't get the sense that a huge number of people are watching those shows.
Yeah, I mean, there
aren't
much smaller
Runaways. No, and I've watched season one of Cloak and Dagger, and I will pick up season two at some point when I get done.
Yeah, I am the same way.
I've only watched a couple episodes of Runaways and a couple episodes of Cloak and Dagger. So I just, and I would definitely watch it if it was something that we, for example, we want to spend some time talking about. But it was not high on my priority list, and not because they were bad, but because they were just, it was not drawing me in as many as like I had a lot of other shows to watch.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Cloak and Dagger sort of ties into the MCU. I'm doing finger quotes here, in a similar way that Daredevil does, in that like they deal with Roxxon.
Yeah.
You know, that's a company name.
Well, and there's
the police sergeant
or whatever she is, came from, was mentioned in Daredevil or Jessica Jones, I can't remember, and then shows up in
okay.
So there's an actual character reference between the two of them.
Yeah, gotcha. Like it's the low-key stuff. But I mean, if you
but
have
not
to,
the low-key stuff.
But not the low-key stuff, which is
exactly.
Be on the streaming
it's the low-key, but not the low-key. Right, exactly. Like, Daredevil Season 3, I thought was pretty great. I really enjoyed it.
I agree.
It's top-notch. I don't know how you do that show when Thanos destroys half of everything.
Right, and does it matter like, to the show that you're trying to, the story you're trying to tell about Matt Murdock in that season?
You can't
I don't
tell.
Think it does.
You can't tell any. You honestly, the reason they skip 5 years is you can't tell the same story in those 5 years. Like, how did everybody not just resort to cannibalism and murder everybody?
Well, there's plenty of food.
I mean, that's the
the answer is inherently people are good, right? And they're going to go on with their daily lives and like try to be good and support each other, which is what the support group's about, and that's good and affirming. But that is an insane time.
Well,
there's 5 years where half of everybody disappeared, and then they come back. That is like.
It's basically done so that Tony can have a kid.
I mean, it's Tony Stark's fault.
I think that is the real reason why the whole thing. He has real stakes in the fight.
Stark Stakes, like, my favorite brand.
Nah.
Yeah. You know what Stark Stakes did? Actually made money, turns out.
All right.
Okay. Do we should move on?
Should move on because we're running out of the time that I've mentally assigned to this task. So we're going to jump to our superhero sweep segment, in which we're going to talk about some other shows that are happening right now. I think this week we're going to discuss the season 5 finale of The Flash. So if you haven't watched this season of The Flash, or if you care, you know, you haven't watched and you don't want to be spoiled about it, maybe tune out now and jump back in a little bit when we get to the letters portion of the show. But right now, let's do some superhero sweep. There actually is a sound effect. That's all I'm saying.
I feel like this season was kind of fair to middling for the most part.
I did a Flash season ranking.
I didn't care about what's her name, Nora, right, that much, and she's pretty much the focus of the whole season.
I was debating with some people in the Incapable member Slack Flash season ratings, and I think that I would slot this. I think clearly season 1 is the best season of The Flash.
Yeah,
hands down.
Yeah.
Season 1 is just a good season.
It's a good
TV
show.
It's just good. Flat.
I think I would put this second.
I would too, though.
I think I would put season 4 last year under that.
Yeah.
Season 2 is kind of I love the multiverse stuff in season 2, but a lot of what I remember about season 2 was stuff just breaking
hostage
down.
Hostage taking,
the whole Zoom and Zalman and all that crap.
Yeah.
That was kind of lame. Season 3 is the absolute pits. Savitar was terrible.
It was awful.
It was just a dull, offensive, gloomy season. So
yeah, and that was our show. You can't do that.
Yeah. Season 3 seemed to be tough. It's tough to do a season 3.
Yeah, season 3 stinks.
But I will stay for this season. They really stuck the landing, right? I mean, I think I thought the last episode was really good.
There's a great fight in the last episode, which felt like the kind of superhero fight you want to see on these shows all the time, where they have like, well, we know we're going up against this super powerful guy. We've come up with a plan that uses all of the abilities of our superhero team, and we executed that plan correctly.
Yeah, right, right.
Which is refreshing.
Some major league screw up.
Yeah, and I do like that Zoom. Is it? It's not Zoom. The Reverse Flash.
I love his name. Yeah, Reverse Flash. Thawne.
Who's Zoom? Is that somebody else?
Yes, that is how bad this show is.
Zoom was
season 2.
Right.
Was that Tony Todd?
He was the voice in the suit, but he turned out to be the guy who was pretending to be Jay Garrick.
The yellow guy. Yeah. I like that the anti-Flash, Reverse Flash, is just better.
Yeah.
He's just actually better at being a Flash than the Flash, which is kind of cool. Like, he's running up that, like, he splits into two at one point, and he runs down a building and smacks him. Like, it's actually more interesting than just watching, like, lightning run around a city block until, like, why? I don't understand why all these speedsters fight by their, and their first move is to run away. Like, why? What is that?
When all you got is a hammer, guy.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, I actually enjoyed this one.
When all you got is a hammer, make yourself an axe.
I was going to say, when all you got is a hammer, you're probably Thor.
No, he has a hammer and an axe. And he will share with his friend.
And he's right. He'll loan it out.
Although he gives his friend a little one, which is
I did. I really enjoy Thawne. And I the thing that this season does remind me a lot about is that so much of this show, I think Tom Cavanaugh really is a backbone of so much of the show, because I do literally forget that it's him playing all these different roles, because in some ways they're very broad, right? Like, this season he did Sherlock, and it was like, it's a very broad character, and it's, you know, it's very affected, right? Like, it's got the he's got the accent and all that.
It's a little much,
but it's fine, because when he goes, to me that's fine, because then when we go and we watch Thawne, even though it's the same actor, I do feel like, oh yeah, it's a totally different character. Like, I've just switched, my brain,
like,
switches.
This episode
even
literally
about
cut between Thawne and Sherlock, and it didn't feel weird. You were like, these are two different people. It's I'm understanding this and following it. He's a his ability to play broad stereotypical roles is great. It's fun. It is compelling to watch. I wish that the season hadn't leant so heavily upon it.
I wish they hadn't done it, made him French, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it's the accent that just bugs me.
It's not a very good accent either.
No, it's not a great accent. And I think I liked it a lot better when he was Wells from Earth 2 and Thawne the same season, because the differences were much subtler and you got more of a sense that Wells might be a bad guy. And there was that sort of tension too, like how much of these guys actually are the same, and then they do turn out to be different. I mean, I think he's Wells, and so at least one or two seasons, because he's Wells from Earth 2 in more than one season, right?
Right.
Also,
right.
It's never explained why Thrawn looks like him in the future.
There's some timey-wimey stuff with him. And
he says something about how he likes the face or something like that. I mean, I think he makes some offhand.
Do you know who likes the face?
The
people who write the checks like the face. That's what happens.
Well, it's funny too, because we did the guy who played him on Legends, the real Thawne, Matt Letcher, is like also very good in that role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
he's great. I would have loved to have seen him.
Yeah. I don't have a beef with him. It is weird and doesn't make a lot of sense, but I don't have a beef with Tom Cavanaugh playing him either. Like I think
it's fine. It's just clearly it's a budget thing, right?
And this season in general, I thought Cicada was not a bad villain. It was very different, which I liked. Whole serial killer vibe was kind of fun.
I thought their choice of the way that guy talked was really bad.
Oh, poor Chris Klein. They had, especially in the flashbacks where he talks perfectly normally in the flashbacks with Grace, and you're like, why is it he became evil and now I need to talk like this all the time?
I have to talk like this.
I picked up a smoking
habit.
I
think that's a choice you make in episode one or two.
Yeah.
It's hard to walk back.
Oh, man, I'm stuck with this. Which is not great.
Why did we do that?
Because by episode 22, you're like, well, we can't just have him change.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's nice because I think they also set it up in some ways because for example, in the last episode, where Grace in the in her coma has the devil and the angel, right? Like the cicada version and her uncle, they sound very different, which is nice. Chris Klein, a guy I haven't seen much since American Pie, I think.
was he in American Pie?
Oh yeah, Chris Klein was like a teen heartthrob circa early 2000s.
Was he?
Yeah.
I guess my heart was spoken for at that point, because I don't remember him at all.
Yep. Yeah, I think that was where he first that was his second movie, and I think he never quite became totally famous in that regard, but he had a good run for a little while, so it was kind of interesting to see him come back and play very much against type. I thought he was good. I liked his eventual redemption. I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
That was a nice arc.
The way they switched, they switched cicadas.
Yeah. Plus, I think it was nice because it showed off the parts of the Flash that a lot of people tend to like the best, which is things that when it feels a little more hopeful, they spend a lot of time being like, you know what? Maybe we can save this guy instead of just trying to beat him.
Yeah. So the one sort of arbitrary rule that they imposed upon themselves, which if I'd been given a voice in the room, I probably would have agreed with, is you can only administer the cure given consent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that
was good.
I thought it was. Well, first of all, it increases the level of difficulty, right?
Right.
That's hard. And given that these people have previously have they killed people? I feel like they've just killed people.
Ollie style, but
no. But I mean, it's like, hey, look, we turned you into atoms, or we trapped you in the Speed Force for eternity, where you will
wiped Thawne out of existence. Although that didn't take.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit merciful, I guess. I mean,
yeah, didn't seem like it when he dissolved, but
whatever. Actually, he was pretty upset. That's okay. So that sucks.
But it didn't seem to hurt Nora when she got dissolved either. So.
Right.
She got
Poor Nora. Yeah, let's get there in a second. Anyway, I liked the idea that because X-Men 3 sort of touched on this, right? Where there was a cure for mutants and they started using it as a weapon.
Right.
Which is, you know, sort of leads to the giant showdown. And I thought they handled it in an interesting way, at least. I think part of that was just to make the plot harder, or else they could have solved it way quicker.
I think they
did a good job.
I thought they did a nice job of setting it up as sort of a moral argument, right? Like, Cisco is very opposed to them using it as a weapon. And, you know, Barry is at first thinking, like, well, this is a advantage we have. And more to the point, you know, there is an argument of, like, oh, you know, shouldn't... If you are using these powers for evil, shouldn't there be a recourse for depriving you of them? And, like, not to say that that argument totally holds water, but, like...
No, morally, no.
But I can see why you would take that angle, right? Like, if you are in that universe at that time and thinking about all the, like, havoc...
I can see why you might, but it is akin to sterilization.
Right, and I get, and I think that's why they come down the way that they did. But it was good that they put it out there as, like, a... Someone was going to think of using it as a weapon, and it was good that they showed the implications of that and why that is not the correct choice to make.
I 100% agree. I thought that was the brave and interesting thing that they did this season.
And then they solved gun control.
Well, yeah. I mean, I kind of would have liked to have had that be a little bit more instead of the psychology of this kid who got hit in the face with some metal from a satellite. But broadly, I think they succeeded in this season better than they have in the past, you know, all of them since one, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed.
Yep.
Still not excited about the show. So.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where an episode would come out and I would sit on it for a couple of weeks before watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did watch a bunch of them in one go at some point, thinking I should just catch up and get through it. Yeah. And it was. You know, yeah, it was better than it's been. It's still not a great show, but it's fine. It's fine. And yeah, as we alluded to, I think at the end of the Arrowcast last week, it also does have its own tie-in to the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is coming up this fall, in which they just very blatantly retconned something that had been in the show since season one.
They literally show you the date going backwards.
Yeah, I thought that was funny because it was like, you know what? Let's not even bother coming up. Like, there are plenty of reasons we could give to explain this, but it's not really important.
So here's the funny thing, and what I want you and all of our readers to sort of wrap their heads around is that if a change has been made in the timeline such that the date that the Flash vanishes is not in 2024, but is instead in 2019. Do we agree on that and that notion of time travel?
Which part of time travel are we talking about?
The fact that if you make it like a linear time travel, and if you're in the back and you something happens so that in the future events are going to be different. It's going to happen in 2019 instead of 2024. Sure. Okay. So we agreed on just the basic principle of that. What I want to know is, why does the date on the newspaper go backwards like a clock being rewound?
clearly, you've never read a futuristic newspaper, guy.
Like, it feels like that would be an instantaneous event, right? Like, it's either going to happen here or it's going to happen there. Not like, oh, all of these dates in between until it settles on something.
Timeline's in flux.
Like, how does that... Like, what, somebody was dying slowly over all of those years until it finally... Like,
if you go into a casino and there's the one-armed bandits, you know, you put your money in and you watch the little wheels spin around.
As soon as you... Right. Yeah. The decision is made. The animation is for you.
I think it's Gideon having a little theatricality.
Yeah. Gideon's a bit of a jerk. He's like, just tell me. I need to... Just come on.
You guys have any final thoughts about that? Should we jump to letters really quick and then ramp up?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do the letters page.
All right, so this is a new feature we're introducing on Biff. It is our letters page. We are welcoming comments, questions, thoughts from you out there, send them over. We've got an email address. It's biff@theincomparable.com, or you can reach us on Twitter at biffcast. And
Or the fax.
Yep. Our fax number is 555-1234.
5555.
It's all fives. Easy to remember. Keep dialing fives. This week, I'm just looking through our Twitter feed since we did announce the show last week. Let me throw out this first question because it is our very first. There's a couple different ones, but I'm going to go with the one that I think will torment John the most. This is
Boxers and Briefs.
Reader Ash, who asks for consideration for our first letters page, are Sam and Dean superheroes?
Ooh.
No.
John says no, having never watched the show. This, of course, being...
I've seen it wrong. I've seen one episode of the show.
Okay. Sam and Dean Winchester from Supernatural, which is well known to be a favorite of mine and Guy's.
Yeah. All right, Simon, this one's up to us.
I think in that genre, you're really hard pressed to become a superhero. Buffy is practically a superhero, but even in that genre,
But here's the thing:
that is the wrong genre.
All right, so let me throw this out here, just as a example, as a possibility of why they might qualify for superheroes. Now, what is the requirement of being a superhero? Like, what's the defining factor? Do you think?
You have to be in a superhero show.
See, all right, you're not playing by the rules.
Have abilities beyond that of a typical person.
And I think it's more than that.
It's more than that.
I'm not sure I can define it. I'm not prepared to define it.
Well, how is Batman a superhero?
This is what I'm saying. Batman or Ollie, both superheroes. Neither of them have superpowers, as it were, but they do have skills.
Yeah. Abilities beyond that of it. Right. Yeah.
And
here's the thing, though. I come down with John. I don't think they are superheroes. And I also can't define that.
Well, they are, let's put it this way, they are clearly heroes. No argument on that front.
Sure.
Sure.
They are on a show called Supernatural, therefore they are superheroes. Job done. Court dismissed.
That's
and
not
moving
fair.
On to the next question.
All right. Okay. Next question. But we're going to revisit this.
We can't solve this right now.
So I'm going to get a gavel. Our pals on the Incomparable, Syracuse and Snell, do a show called Robot or Not. And my question to them was, are Jedi superheroes?
Mm.
I say no.
You say no? Yeah, right?
Because it's a science fiction show. It's not a superhero show.
Yeah, I mean, but they clearly have powers that are beyond those of normal people.
But they're not.
And they clearly
superhero is a genre. It's not a definition. Mm. I mean, it's the type of show that it is. It's not about the powers of the individual.
Can we all
agree? Anyway, I mean, we'll find out where Judge Syracuse comes down on that.
Can we all agree? Can we all
character.
Agree that though they may not be superheroes, they are superheroes? How about that? We put a space in the middle.
Some of them are not heroes. Some of them are just jerks.
All right. Moving.
Yeah, but that's true. Okay. Yeah. Moving on.
Reader Jack, this is not so much a question as a comment, but he's kind of suggesting that we come together to create a podcast and record an episode about Amazon's The Tick, which sadly just got canceled.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to be high on our list. I will say I read the original Tick because Ben Edlund, who wrote that, it was originally published, the first like 13-issue run was published by New England Comics, which is one of my local comic stores, which briefly published comics, I guess, in the 90s. I read that entire run very early on and have very fond memories of it, but haven't really revisited it.
Yeah, I read some of it just when the cartoon came out.
The first cartoon, there's a cartoon
which was great.
Two live action versions. One of
which, I watched that show. I mean, I was in graduate school and I watched that show. Every
I watched
Saturday
a lot of that.
Morning.
Yeah,
it was like the my then girlfriend and who would become my wife was very unsure of why she had moved in with me.
Yeah, wow. Still is.
Yeah, I was gonna say
exactly.
Nothing has changed.
Yeah. Anyway,
120 years later.
Yeah. Spoon.
Yeah.
Spoon.
I'm hiding behind a bush.
It's a hedge. Please move along.
Hedge. Oh, sorry.
I will say that one of my fond memories of that is being in high school, and one of the pastimes my friends had were we designed and made role-playing games, which were generally terrible, but we made a Tick role-playing game that was hilariously bad. Maybe I'll dig that up for a bonus topic. Yeah.
But the Amazon show was good. Yeah. Alas. And they said something about trying to shop it around. Is that right?
I hadn't heard that, but it's possible.
Or maybe I'm thinking of another show that got canceled.
I haven't seen the Amazon one. I've heard it was good. I recall the previous one. Didn't the main show, the Incomparable, do something about the tick?
I think it has been covered somewhere else on the Incomparable. I'd have to look, but I think it has.
Anyway,
so we may get to it.
Dear reader, go look at that. I don't know if we'll cover it. Maybe if we dig up the show and really find it funny. We'll do that right after Cheers.
Yeah. listener Ben just wrote in to say Titans exclamation point. Guy, this one's for you.
So here's the thing with Titans. I don't like that show. I really don't. I've discussed this on Twitter with people. I came around to it a little bit and then it lost me at the end. Because they have a little kerfuffle with Bruce. I have thought, and in fact, I've agreed to do to record something with our friend James Thompson about Titans. So we may cover Titans and Doom Patrol. I don't know where it'll appear or when it'll appear, but here's the thing. At the time, I wanted to talk about it to get it off my chest that I'd seen this thing and it was hurting my face. But now I'm like, I don't want to be reminded.
You want to share that pain with others?
Well, yeah, and James liked it. And you know, James is a good guy, so I'd like to talk to him about it. But I've told James I will do it, so stay
tuned.
I'm not
sure I'd podcast with him, though.
Right.
All right, well, so
nice guy. Not sure I'd podcast with him.
Look for that. We might drop it in the feed at some point.
Yeah,
like I said,
in the feed, in the members feed. Always think about the members feed.
Could be in the members feed.
Become a member of the Incomparable for my juicy kickbacks. But basically, I'd like to talk about Doom Patrol. I think that is a better show. And if we do Doom Patrol and Titans, I think that's something worth doing.
That's your way in. Yeah.
Not episode by episode, but
makes it palatable for you.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, keep your eye out. Seth, who runs the Hugo's There podcast, which I was on a few months back, wrote in to say, really, the first episode should be about how much better the Flash finale and season was than Arrow's. So I'm just going to slowly roll back from my computer.
I think the finale was a better finale.
Really?
Yeah, I think the Flash's finale was more solid. Better, I don't know, together better than the Arrow one.
They didn't have to deal with the weird... I don't think there's any
question in my mind, though, that the Arrow season was way better than the Flash season.
I would agree with that.
My thing. I was talking over you previously because I was about to thank Seth for listening to his first and last episode of the podcast. We will not be sending these to your door anymore, Seth. So, you know,
your subscription
don't go
has
looking
been
in the mailbox. Turn off your fax machine. That's it. You're done. Yeah, I don't think he's wrong, though, necessarily. I think I give the Arrow season finale a lot of leeway because it just had a lot of water to carry.
Yeah,
frankly,
I agree with that. They had the weird issue of, like, we've got to deal with Felicity not coming back, the show transitioning into something to do with Crisis, wrapping up the full season. There was, like, again, as we talked about on the Arrowcast, which you can listen to, this was almost like a series finale shoehorned into a season finale, which is a lot of work to do.
I'm saying as a thing unto itself, I think the Flashes is a better season finale than the Arrows is.
It had a more satisfying thing going for it. I agree. He also argues Nora greater than Emiko, which I'm not sure I would agree with.
I'm not sure I would agree with that either.
You can't listen to anything ever again. That's it. Close off your ears. No,
I don't hate Nora.
I like Emiko a lot.
Like, I wasn't really inspired by the character that much. I think I don't know. She complains a lot.
Well, wait a second.
Which is unfair.
I want
to
know
where to the character.
I mean, joking aside, I kind of want to know where Seth is coming from here, right?
Like, I have a tweet guy. I don't have a lot of depth.
No,
on this
I know. No, I'm not going to ask you for more information. I'm going to project.
I'm asking him now.
I'm going to project onto Seth. Was Nora more sentimental in that she was a greater mirror for the relationship between like her parents?
Maybe. I mean,
like that, yeah, I'm probably trying to figure out the utility of the character. Like, well, what did it teach us about the people that we know on the show?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I think Emiko teaches us something about how bad Robert was.
Yeah.
Which, although we've been arguing for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and because I think Emiko,
the last couple of seasons, they were like slowly realizing, oh, gee, he's Robert maybe not person. Been very yeah. good guy.
I think Emiko had a more interesting arc. Because we had that, like, oh, she's kind of a good guy. Oh, she's not a good guy. Well, she managed to redeem herself in the end. Like, I thought there was something interesting.
Yeah, so I think that final redemption was a little bit short-winded.
Yes. Right.
I think that was probably the, you know, again, that episode had a lot to do, and there wasn't a lot of time to spend on it. But yeah. I liked where they were going with it. I liked the actress. I thought that
I liked the actress a lot.
She held her own, and I liked that. I didn't expect her to be the big bad, and she was.
Certainly, Nora is more personable, more funny, more charming. You could enjoy watching her on screen a lot more, I think, than Emiko. Partially because Emiko spends half a season murdering people, which is never cool. But for me, I found Emiko in The Flash. The Emiko and the Arrow arc to be more satisfying to my taste.
I also wouldn't necessarily say that Emiko and Nora have to be judged on the same spectrum. They're two totally separate characters. You can have both. Yeah. They do different things. I will say,
they are the new character that got thrown in.
Right, but I think that's it. And they're both women of similar age, I think.
That's the interesting part. I would have thrown into that. Nora versus Mia, two future children from our main characters, which I thought was interesting that we did both of those this season. Also, has anybody charted all of the future timelines of the Arrowverse so far? Because things happen in like similar timelines, but seem to be wildly different.
Yeah,
yeah.
Someone should go through and check that out.
Somebody should do that, and it's not going to be any of us.
All right, I've got one last one, and it's more of a request. And as it happens, it was something that we need to talk about anyways. Reader Peter writes, I hope, maybe slightly cheekily, I hope, may slightly cheekily demand that the rating system remains in place, becoming ever more disconnected with every different show you look at. Which reminds me, we did not rate our initial Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, which we should probably do. Guy, do you want to run over the rating system for our new listeners who will totally not understand it?
I would. And Dan, we don't have listeners, we have readers.
I'm so sorry. Some people do have like the speech-to-text thing, text-to-speech, where it reads out the transcript.
Probably.
Right. I want to be an accessible podcast. That's the thing. Right.
Like, that is very, very true. If you are listening to this, we're here for you.
Fred, the Macintosh voice.
We're happy to provide this in audio form as well as a canonical printed out fax. The rating system. We've put a lot of thought into this.
Some may argue too much.
Sort of?
So, well, we've put enough thought into this that John gets annoyed every time I try to explain it because he feels that everybody should just understand it inherently.
And so it seems obvious. It seems obvious to me.
It is. It seems obvious. And to some degree, he's right. We have three ratings. We originally had two, but now we've got three because nuance is king.
Eventually, we'll have eight.
Well,
there are refinements within the rating system, but we'll wait a while before we broach those.
No, just
wait. Let me explain the baseline rating system before we get into the nuances. The lowest level is what we call Alex. Alex was a character on season 4 of Arrow who was briefly dating Thea and who was the most boring person in the world. By the end, he was carrying a clipboard marking off who was getting indoctrinated into the bad guy's lair. Alex just stinks. There's no redeeming qualities about him. He's just boring. Nothing's happening. And
and you're happy when he dies.
Here's the thing about how Alex died. We didn't even know he was dead. Anarchy kills him somehow, and Thea's like, oh, like, but we don't know that he's dead. Like, he could have lived. It doesn't matter. That's how bad Alex is. It just doesn't matter. That's how bland he is. Did he live? Did he die? Who cares? It's Alex. It's fine. The next one up is John Jr. We used to have a lovely bouncing baby girl on Arrow called Sarah, who was the daughter of John Diggle and Lila. And then Barry Allen on The Flash went and screwed everything up. And we got all FaceTimed. What's it called? Flashpointed. Whatever.
He called us. We got something on his video chat.
We definitely got something that starts with an F, and it was not great. And Sarah, poor little Sarah, turned into this new baby, John Jr., somehow, because the timeline got rewritten. We didn't have this rating initially, and it is the one canonical nuance that we've added to the rating system. Because a reader wrote in, and we wanted something that was like, we're angry about it. Like, it sucks. We don't want it, but you can't be angry about it. And it turns out John Jr. is, you know, it sucks. We don't want it, but you can't be angry because it's a baby. So you can't hate a baby, right? It's garbage. It's not great. But it's a baby, so it's fine. You know, everybody's okay with a baby.
I'm not sure I ever heard this level of detail in the explanation.
I'm learning a lot here.
I really am. It's work. It works. It's great.
I'm on board. I'm on board.
I've been working with you people for like years now. You didn't read the handbook? How have you not read the handbook?
I skimmed it.
I don't know. You kept taping things to my door, and it's like, I just want to go inside.
The highest level of rating is a Biff. Biff Conklin was a character in season four of Arrow. He was the long suffering henchman who got everything right. He immediately pegged Ollie as a guy that was going to be a detriment to their criminal operation, doing criminal magical stuff. Told his boss, caught him multiple times. Eventually, Ollie ends up murdering him, and then he comes back as a ghost, and then still gets murdered. And Biff is just the best. He's just the hardest working henchman in show business, and that's why our highest rating is called a Biff. And honestly, that's why we call this show Biff.
Mm-hmm. It is true, and we got a semi-canonical confirmation that Biff was this character's actually his nickname from the actor who played him.
The actor.
Because Twitter is a weird and sometimes not terrible place. Every once in a while, it's not terrible.
If you pester an actor enough, they may respond to you.
I'm so embarrassed when we actually end up interacting with people that we're basically just cracking jokes about. Not them, like, but the characters and their work. And like, we are enjoying it. We really are. And we're having a good time. But every now and then you get into a quandary where you're like, oh God, I've got to explain to this guy that, like, you know what?
Right. What for like four stupid thing four that we've been talking about for 4 years.
Yeah. Remember that thing you spent 3 months on like 8 years ago? Guess what?
It meant everything to us.
We can't let it go.
We just can't let it go. Anyway, and we can't let you go, Biff. Okay.
So now we know the rating system.
Would you like
to... And John, thank you so much for letting me go into that in excruciating detail. I'll try to keep it brief.
I enjoyed every minute of that.
Right.
And I learned a lot.
Yeah. It's like a new show, right? We need to explain it at some point.
Sure. Yeah. No.
Would you like to rate the S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes individually or together?
I can do them individually if you want.
Okay.
I'm going to give them both Biffs. I thought the first one...
It didn't matter.
It was easy. I thought the first one was a little weaker than the second one. I liked the second one a little bit more. Even though I just said that I would rate them both separately, I like the way they both fit together. And there's always a moment in S.H.I.E.L.D. where people act out of their convictions and maybe do a crazy thing that just feels right to them at the time. And Gemma just deciding that she's going to make the decision and jump the ship to go rescue Fitz. felt like one of those moments that I enjoyed it. So anyway.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things I do like about the show is that characters make choices that are kind of required by the plot.
Mm.
But often they fit within the boundaries of what you expect that character might do.
Yeah.
And that's tough. You know what I mean? Like it's right. tough to have a character that is defined one way and then you need them to do something wacky. And this kind of made sense to me. I was kind of okay with it.
Guy, you want to tack your ratings on there?
Your ratings.
Okay. So keeping in mind the rating system, Alex, John Jr., Biff,
in that order. Never mind.
John, I got fired.
Confused.
It's fine.
This is my first time with.
I just explained everything to you. Like,
are you new here, John? Are you new to the show?
How much longer do I need to spend talking about this?
So just pretend Alex, I didn't say that.
Alex bad, John Jr. middling, and then Biff good. I'm going to give the first one a Mac and the second one a Coulson.
You are also fired. I will be doing this show by myself now.
They're both biffs. I enjoy them both for different reasons. I watched them pretty close together, and I think they're setting up a good narrative arc for the season.
Yeah.
I totally forgot what they were doing last season, and I think I'm going to have to go back and watch a little bit of that to just catch up. But I have high hopes, and the performances and the characters on this show I really enjoy, so I'm kind of looking forward to covering it.
Yeah,
I'm with you guys. That's one of the reasons I gave you the option of rating them together, was because I actually think, as John said, they fit really well together, especially because we basically have the through line with Mac and the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and then the separate Gemma and Daisy on the Zephyr, and Fitz and Enoch on the freighter, and we get one bit of each of them in the opposite episodes, and then mainly just those through lines. So it felt more like a kind of a two-part premiere. I forgot to note my one thing that I think is a continuity error in the first episode, and I'll have you guys check me. There is a scene which is kind of the climactic scene of the first episode, in which they're at a location that I happen to know is Pasadena City Hall, which you may know from Parks and Rec, is also used as sort of the City Hall in Parks and Rec. But there, that climactic scene, do they not blow up that entire building? Isn't there like an Independence Day style scene where like the laser comes down at that very end of the first episode when they're like,
well, wait, laser doesn't come down, but they've planted bombs in it and they're doing the exfil when Coulson rolls up.
Does it blow up? Them. I was unclear because it looked like the entire thing blew up. And then there's a scene where they do that very fancy, the car flips after the truck hits it. And like you get the upside down, but you see
that was a great shot.
You see the building in it, and it was like 30 seconds later. It's like, wait a second, didn't they just blow that up? I should rewind. Oh. Anyways,
yeah. Okay.
So I think everything blew out of the building, not the building blew up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'd have to go back and look.
I don't remember, frankly.
But I was looking too closely at that amazing car stunt and the continuity in that shot.
Like you were paying attention to the right thing.
Right.
I was paying attention to nitpicky details because that's what I do. Anyways, yes, I felt like it really goes well together. I like all these characters. I've enjoyed how S.H.I.E.L.D. manages to continually reinvent itself and feel very different every season while still maintaining a certain core of what the show is. I'm really excited for more space hijinks and whatever the hell is going on with our Coulson doppelganger. So I will give these jointly and separately all biffs. Biffs all around.
Woo!
Well, that's a pretty good start.
Good thing we went into detail on the rating system.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you guys a biff, too.
Aww.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what? We're going to give the world a biff.
That was a famous ad campaign.
Mm-hmm. Right. Created by John Hamm.
That's right.
It's not even... It's not Dick Whitman.
Nope.
It's just John Hamm.
It's just John Hamm. I believe it.
He was very young at the time.
He was very nice. Mm. All right, that is it for our inaugural episode of Biff. I know we went a little bit longer. I don't think our episodes will be quite this long in the future.
No, we'll keep you tight.
Is this the talk show?
Yeah.
We had a lot of ground to cover, and at least 20 to 30 minutes of it was Guy recapping the rating system.
Which, by the way, is going to be a weekly spot, so if you have any...
I can just
if
cut
you have
that
any
out.
Maybe
that should be its own podcast.
Can I just cut that out and just reuse the part that we had?
If you have any corrections, write in. We will be tuning the rating system weekly.
So you get the members feed where people, you know, can contribute and get the members feed, which we highly recommend people do. And then we have this show, which is, you know, free to listen to. And then we're going to have a mandatory podcast in which Guy explains the rating system.
It's just called pre-rec. And you've got it.
Right. You've got it.
I'd argue you're paying with your time. There are other things you could be doing. You should maybe go outside.
You have to listen. So.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this inaugural episode. I'd like to thank my co-host, as always, John Moltz. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
Guy English, always.
I think you kind of had to, but whatever.
Guy English, always a pleasure.
I'm portal spraying my way out of here.
And thank you all out there for reading along with us. We'll see you next week. Welcome to Biff, a show.
See, I couldn't even get through it once. Couldn't get through it once.
Could not get through it without laughing.